Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hey, 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 how y'all doing? It's your girl, Didi Leggett, a.k.a. The Core Queen. I am back with another episode, episode 70 to be specific, of The Core Queen Chat. And I have somebody like that's pretty daggone amazing, y'all. He is on the show tonight. He's my guest, and he is all the way in Australia. Bucket list. I need to get over there to check out Australia. But let me tell y'all a little bit about my guest, Gideon. Y'all, he might be that guy. He might be that guy. Gideon completed a full ride sporting scholarship at, I hope I pronounced this right, Ipswich Grammar School. Gideon dedicated himself to a decade of competitive sport, signing with two National Rugby League clubs and representing South Africa in 2017 at the Rugby League World Cup qualifiers. After excelling at the highest level in sports, Gideon made the seamless transition from football to focus on his passion for helping others. This passion and dedication has led him on a journey to not only help others to achieve their health and fitness goals, but to expand their mindset in the process. Gideon is a qualified personal trainer and founder of his own lifestyle brand, Zimbition. I hope I got that right, Zimbition. Through this brand, he provides physical training and personal development programs, talks, and camps for individuals and groups. Gideon is also a proud graduate of the Actors Conservatory and New York Film Academy, located on the Gold Coast. And over the years, has been featured in productions both on the main stage and big screen. To date, Gideon's most notable role is in the award-winning, adrenaline-pumping, full-contact theater production, Prize Fighter, where he earned himself a Best Supporting Actor nomination. More recently, Gideon went back out on the road, touring nationally in 2021, this time with the award-winning George Orwell's Animal Farm. Over the years, Gideon has written short films which loosely tell his life's journey and also highlight more about his mantra, which is ultimately the ethos of Zimbition. You are more than what you have become. You are more than what happens to you. Gideon's story is still being written, and through his passion to help others, he continues to dedicate himself to being the best he can be so that he can support others in their personal journeys to do the same. Y'all welcome my boy Gideon to the show.
How you doing, Didi?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for that intro. We could have.
Oh, no. They need to know who you are. You got up from Australia. They need to know who you are.
I appreciate you.
You no tested my reading skills. Public school ain't so bad after all. I am so excited to have you on the show.
As am I to be here. Thank you.
Listen, and let me just tell you, I got to get through this show with this accent because it's like, whoof. I'm going to have to get my phone out. Yeah. Okay, let me get it together. So get it. I'm going to start with my first question for you. What do you believe? And this might be, you know, because you're a mindset coach. You out here, you know, getting people some different tools to change their mindset because we are in a time where we really need some help with that. Right. So what do you believe the connection is between childhood trauma and how we face adversity as adults?
That's a great question. It's a big, big question. And it's one of the biggest, you know, conversations happening at the moment when we're dealing in the world of psychotherapy, if you will. Oh. But, you know, to answer that question, I like to come up from the angle, first of all, understanding what is trauma and what is adversity. And simply put, trauma is, you know, when the brain hasn't resolved something and the body hasn't had the opportunity to express it. Mm. And so you're left with this unresolved experience. And so naturally, as time goes on, an individual is forced to create a character for survival's sake. Mm. Now, that character might not be somebody that they desired to become, but it was someone they needed to become. And so ultimately, as you go through life, you know, you have this distorted view on love, relationship, whatever it is that triggered you to create that character. And so that's trauma in a sense, this unresolved element. And then when we look at adversity for someone who's going through trauma is not seen as a challenge. It's seen as a threat, you know, because adversity will command something, an element of you to be exercised that you put away and blocked for the fear of losing yourself again. So you'll find that if you haven't resolved something that happened to you as a child or through your childhood trauma, every time you meet adversity, you will negate, you will sort of retract first and then all the narratives that you've created for survival's sake. And 9 times out of 10, they're not very supportive for progressiveness. They're there to keep you safe and you're going to retract and retract until you subside through the adversity. Yeah.
Wow. That's deep. That is so enlightening. And it's like, whoa. Because I'm connecting dots, so.
Okay.
Okay, see, that's why you do what you do, because you be knowing, okay. So can you share a moment when you realized your childhood experiences were affecting your ability to cope?
Absolutely. We grew up in a household, so we migrated to Australia. I'm originally from Africa. You know, I'm from a place called Malawi, and we migrated to Australia. And in the early stages, obviously, mum and dad were also, you know, navigating their experiences to move into a new country. And the end result, obviously, they went their separate ways. Mm. So for me as a young kid, watching mum and dad go through separation and divorce, if you will, that became my view on what a relationship looks like. And evidently, as I went through life, going in and out of relationships, when things sort of got hard, I left. Mm. And that's because I simply replicated and understood that's what it looks like, you know, and that was my distorted view on relationships. So, yeah.
That's interesting because I would, like, if I'm thinking back in relationships where guys like just left, like they didn't even fight. Right. Maybe that was their issue. And I think we all do this. But we make it a us thing instead of looking at the other person and trying to figure out, like, it was not about me at all. Exactly. They actually left because that's their coping mechanism. They don't know how to. Wow.
Absolutely.
That's interesting. Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah.
So how does trauma distort our self-belief, like our confidence and our resilience?
Great question. So when we look at trauma, once again, it's an unresolved element. And so the distortion comes from when you create a character for survival's sake. And being a person of survivalness, you're not really productive. You know, you're not really you don't have clarity on things. It's just about getting through this. You know, it's about if they see me this way or if this element is exposed, then I'm going to lose control again. So I'm not going to deal with the real reality. I'm going to deal with the realness that I've created. And so ultimately, the way you express, the way you connect, the way you move throughout life, to you, it makes sense. But to people watching you, they go, well, this person's a little left footed. You know, they're doing something, you know, and just on top of that, I really want to encourage anytime you see characteristics that contradict or sort of a bit left with people, we got to take that USA moment and go, what's going on there? You know, be slow to react, you know, and yeah.
So it's interesting that you just said that. So, okay. So how would you, because I don't even have this on my board, but you just said something that kind of made me wonder. So if I'm in a relationship with somebody, and they don't have the coping skills that are required for that said relationship, and I'm kind of like trying to woosa with them, but they're starting to project so much of their trauma onto me, like, how do I even navigate that? Do I just abandon it? Or do I stay and try to help them work through it? If they're, because maybe sometimes they don't even know that they're doing these things, or that's just their way of being.
Yeah, well, a lot of the times they don't know. You know, they only know when the collateral damage has to be cleaned up. You know, when the person that they love is gone and now they're in an empty house. You know, when you're in court now fighting for, you know, child custody, whatever it is, the collateral damage is usually the aha moment. That was bad what I did. So to bring it back to your question, how do you deal with someone in a relationship that's going through that? Well, we always bring it back to you got two options, you know. And the first option is you become somebody that they need and put yourself aside so that you complement their worldview. Or you become something that you need and then demonstrate it to them so that they see that you're no longer a character in their worldview. Each of those elements are very difficult, all right? It's not as easy as it sounds, because at the end of the day, you also have to be accountable and responsible for what becomes of you two together, you know? So just bringing it back, either becoming a contributor to their worldviews, so if, you know, being patient, waiting for the one day that they're going to change or, you know, continue, you know, but this is what it is, you know? Or you can say, I'm that young girl that, you know, once dreamed of doing this and experiencing life like this. And what is my birthright to experience my existence? I'm going to commit to that, you know. And sadly, you know, if we want to be completely honest, we do have to walk away from people, you know.
Yeah.
If that's what it entitles. So.
Yeah, I agree, because I think a lot of times, especially here on the U.S. side, I know we're kind of a little, we're always dragged for filth all over the world for our dating practices. But I think a lot of times the women here kind of stay thinking that it's going to get better. And then they realize years later that they kind of just wasted their time, because you can't change somebody who's not willing to change or who doesn't really think there's anything wrong with them in the first place. So, and then you mentioned something about the distortion part, about like being a character. And I think I can relate to that, because before I did my work and I used to be in relationships with guys, I used to like really treat them bad. And that was because now I know that I've done the work and I've connected the dots. I know that that was my defense mechanism. I'm trying to make you not like me. So that way you won't hurt me. I'll hurt you first.
Boom.
So yeah, that is it.
Sabotaging is one of the mechanisms someone who's going through trauma will sort of, they would rather have it destroyed than, you know, deal with. Well, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well done on doing the work.
Sometimes I do it now, but I'm like, okay, yo, stop.
Good. Very good. Yeah.
Oh, man. That's well crazy. Done. So why do so many trauma survivors feel stuck or unable to bounce back from life's challenges?
Right. It's doing the work. You know, it's about doing the work. And, you know, I take my clients through a process called regulation. You know, we try and avoid using the word healing, because essentially, you know, there's not going to come a point where it's poof, it's all gone. what the body is experiencing and what the mind has been exposed to will forever be part of your history, you know. And so the process of regulation, regulating means you're in control. You know, one of the examples I like to give is when you go to a gym, you regulate the exertion, the level of effort you put in, you know, the weights you put on. The gym doesn't grab you and say, hey, jump on the treadmill. You're done with the treadmill. Get on the bench press. You regulate. So you're in control. And that's what regulation means. You're in control of the exertion. And so with trauma, there's three stages of regulations. There's the first, awareness. All right. So really identifying and putting a name on what you're experiencing. So if you're going through something, to be able to put a name on, what about this moment here am I fearful of? Mm. What scares me about this moment? The second stage is breath work. Now, I know breath work is becoming a phenomenon at the moment, but it's essentially, one, the fundamental of who you are. Without breath, there's no you, all right? Mm. So what breath work does is, without getting too scientific, it relaxes your neocortex, which is the brain part where you think rationally, logically, etc. A person with trauma, this shuts off and you open up your reptilian brain. That's your fight and flight survival mode. So breath work opens this back up. Regulate. So first step, you've brought awareness to what's going on. Second step, you regulate, come back to earth. And third step, being a personal trainer, I said, let's get the body moving because you need to experience your existence. And that's where you gather information that becomes overwhelming and contradicts what the narrative you've built from being a trauma, you know, survivor.
Listen, I'm with you 100%. Breath work, if you haven't tried it, like, it literally changes your life for real. Absolutely. Like, being someone with severe anxiety, that's one thing I didn't really understand. Well, I wasn't taught it, so I didn't know about it. And right. then, because when I was younger, I would have panic attacks, and I just, like, I don't know what is going on. But once I started, like, meditating and breathing, just taking a minute, just stop and just breathe. Like, it really right. does work. The simplest right. thing really change a lot. So
absolutely.
Yeah. One of my mentors used to say a 2-millimeter change can literally change your life. It's just sometimes just the smallest change and it'll.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
I'll take that.
Yeah. I love yeah. that. Because I know a lot of times social media can be overwhelming for people yeah. and they don't. And I think it's just such a horrible place to try to find some type of bounce back from whatever it is you're going through. That's not the place to do it. But most people go on there and, like, they're just venting and they're angry. And it's just like, just take a minute.
Yeah.
Take a minute.
Take a minute.
Yeah. So what are some common coping mechanisms that seem helpful, but actually block, well, I'm going to say regulation because you don't like healing, yeah. regulation and growth.
So run that question back again. Okay. What are some
common coping mechanisms that seem helpful, mm-hmm. but they're actually blocking that, you know, the regulation and the growth process?
Well, the most common one is gym. And I know it sounds contradictory because I mentioned earlier that gym is or moving the body is essentially something that helps you regulate. But what a lot of people tend to do is they turn to the gym post, for example, breakup or any form of, you know, inability to express or experience what's going on. Wow. And they love that feeling of exertion to the point that they're tired. But what you're doing there is you're developing a relationship with gym that says that the eradication of what I'm experiencing and the power lies in exertion. It lies in the gym. So you're not actually resolving. You're just subsiding for the time being. And so with that, again, you know, it's just prolonging your ability to resolve the issue. And so I see that a lot in the gym. And obviously we can go on into, you know, substance abuse, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But definitely gym and overwhelming groups. So try and stay away from just wanting to be around people just because you're going through something. Because loud noises can, and it is contradictory, but, you know, there's a lot of studies done on this. a lot of people, and social media is notorious for this, a lot of people want to hear noise so that their noise becomes suppressed and you're again pushed aside. But and then they become so codependent on their friends, and you see it, you know, when you start to bleed on your friends and you're telling them, just leave him or just leave that job or whatever it is. And you're like, no, but I just want to talk to you. I just want to, it's like, well, you ain't changing your life. You just want me to be here so that your situation prolongs. So yeah, they're the two main standouts that I've found in my industry is, you know, the gym aspect and the overwhelmingness of wanting company just for the sake of having company.
I'm going to have to agree with you with the gym thing, because I'm a personal trainer too. And when I talk to people, they the physical part is always like the easy thing to do, but they don't really want to tackle the root cause of what's really happening, what's really going on. And that's why I really don't take a lot of clients, because I think people need to do the work up here first before they can even attempt to do the physical part of it. Because you need to figure out how you get here. What was going on that even made you or triggered you to get to this point? So I do agree with that. And I also think, and I don't like to do generalizations, but a large majority of men, that's an easy thing for them to do. Just go to the gym. Correct. And, you know, I'm good. This is masculine. I don't have to talk about my feelings. I don't have to talk about my emotions. Let me just go do this and I'll be good.
Right.
Well, yeah, I do. I do agree with that. Now, the large crowds. Yeah, I don't even see. Well, maybe because I got anxiety, because, man, that would trigger me. But I can see that where people just want to stay busy. I got to be around people, stay and look like I'm happy, look like I'm having a good time. And yeah, that's just suppressing what's actually going on.
Absolutely.
That's good. You're good. Okay, so what role does emotional regulation play in how we respond to adversity?
Absolutely. So we got to understand that when we're responding to adversity, again, adversity, simply put, is, you know, something that goes against your desired progression. So when you're working towards a progressive outcome, or simply just want to progress from where you currently are, adversity is there just to check you and say, how deep is the level of conviction that you have for this progress that you're trying to go down? And that's all adversity is. And then, so just going back, what was the question again?
What role does emotional regulation play in how we respond to adversity?
Correct. And so emotional regulation, when we face adversity, the first thing we want to do is react emotionally. Like, why isn't this working? And I'm running out of time, running out of money. And so when we create a character in response with our emotional reaction, that's when that first level of distortion happens. So you don't move with clarity. You move in response, right? And so that's how people fall off that wagon of working towards a desired outcome, and they become a result of an outcome of their emotion.
You're right. We go to panic and like, oh my God, it's not going to work. Especially when it comes to like business ventures, where it feels like your money might be, you might be losing money or something, or something's not working out, but it's just kind of like, let me see how bad you really want this. Let me see.
Exactly.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay. Yeah. Let me regulate my emotions. I swear I'll be like, oh, it's not going to work. Like, oh. And it always works. It always works out. It really does.
Indeed.
Crazy. So how can we begin to tell the difference between a real threat and a trauma-triggered reaction?
Right. I love this question. So tell the difference between a real threat and a trauma-triggered reaction. You've got to check your narrative, all righty? So our narratives ultimately are the driving force of how we're going to show up in the world. Not our desires, not, you know, it's our narrative. So the final narrative that you make and reach to a point of conclusion and conviction is that next step. So when you approach adversity or challenges, if you will, or trauma-triggering situations, you got to ask yourself, is this narrative that I'm using now one that's been so familiar for so long that complements the character that has been moving all these years? Or is this in response, a new response to this new circumstance that I'm presented with right now? And often you will find if you're repeating the same narrative, then the chances are you're operating from that traumatic state. Mm. You know, if you're constantly saying, I'm not good enough, or, you know, we never really had this growing up, or, you know, I'm too black, I'm too white, I'm too tall. Yeah, that's coming from a pre-existing element. You know, if it's reference-based, if you will. Yeah.
So do you think that that plays a big role when it comes to, like, people having unsuccessful relationships where they're continuing to pick the same type of person over and over again?
Correct. Correct. The brain loves nothing more than familiarity. So if you see some signs, it goes, hey, I know the character for this. Pack your bags, my boy. Get out of there. You know, so it knows the character, you know. So that's what you've got to be really mindful of. And that's why we got to do things like breath work and find solitude. Really regulate and come back to yourself. Become familiar with your existence, if you will. Yeah.
Let me get back on my breath work.
Do you do? When was the last time you did breath work?
I don't know. Maybe it hasn't been that long.
Yeah?
Probably 2 weeks ago, maybe.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. Long. Yeah.
I have, like, because, yeah, sometimes I got to just go lay down. You're doing too much. It'd be me. It's me. It's all me. It is all me. I promise you. Oh man, I gotta get my life together. So what helped you shift from surviving to thriving? Or anybody that you had a client, what is the thing that you may have seen commonly or in yourself that helps somebody go from surviving to thriving?
Well, I'll put me and then I'll put my clients. First things first, for me, you know, I always give glorification to the Most High. That's for me, you know. I walked that journey proudly, and yeah, if it wasn't for the knowledge and understanding of that, would be real big trouble, you know. But when I work with clients, the most common thing I found is what does the conversation about yourself to yourself sound like? You know, a lot of us have got this phenomenal conversation about ourselves to others. And often that conversation can have truths left out. It can be over-glorified. But the aim of that conversation is to lead them into a level of conviction who we are. But my question is, what does the conversation about yourself to yourself sound like with the same level of conviction? And that's usually the fundamental where we start building from,
Yeah, that's definitely important, because I think for, like, somebody like me who came from, like, a, you know, not a, a pretty bad background growing up, and I get a question all the time for some reason, and I guess maybe it's the norm for women. They're like, did you never, like, dream about your wedding and getting married? I'm like, man, I was trying to figure out what we was going to eat. I never even considered being married. Like, that never ever crossed my mind as a kid, ever.
Right.
So going, like, being in survival mode for so long and then trying to switch to the thriving, and now that I'm understanding after doing some of the work, like, being in survival mode that long, that's hard to switch that over. It's hard to get out of that.
Absolutely.
To even look at anything in a thriving sense.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think there are certain, like, life experiences that have to come into play to even get you to that point, because some people will never get out of survival mode.
Absolutely.
Damn.
And that's why we need more platforms like these discussions, you know. It's very important, because if we don't talk about it, if we don't have, you know, wonderful people like yourself co-hosting and facilitating a space like this, and then it goes by unknown, you know.
Because some people don't even know that there is another option. They don't, that is, to feel hopeless is just the worst feeling in the world. So they just feel like this is it. There is no silver lining. This is just how it's always going to be. And I just really want people to know that there is, you can do work. And it starts with what you said, like, how are you talking to yourself? What are you saying to yourself to make you believe that it can happen? Yeah. Y'all got it out there. If y'all out there struggling with something, please, please, please try to do some self-work. Do some self-work. It really is. You are the only person stopping you from doing anything. I promise you, it was just you. No, but the man ain't holding you down. I promise. Oh, Lord. So what, other than breath, because you said breath work, it was two other things you said, see? Moving, yep, and positive self-talk, right? Those are like, yep, your three. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you were to give somebody like a project or some homework, and you want them to do something every single day, everything you want to do every day to help them shift and build their resilience, those three things would be your top three. Is there anything else you would have them do?
No, start from there. Because naturally, I feel within everybody, there's the answer. And that answer is usually suppressed because of experiences and circumstances. But if you're given the fundamental tools to sort of allow yourself to explore yourself beyond your limiting narratives, the answer will just reveal within yourself.
Mm.
So rather than being told what to do, you're sort of given a philosophical exercise that allows you to sort of just take one little step outside. Mm-hmm. So breathing. Okay, that's a practice of stillness, you know, and then obviously the narrative. That's a practice of familiarizing the narratives and conversations that are going in your head. Where's the truth? Where's the lie? Where's, you know, the hinderers? Where's their powers? You know, and then moving the body. It's all about checking in. So,
and if you're in the U.S. with all this horrible food, change what you eat. Ooh, it's really a lot of things that are in our food, our air, and our water that are contributing to the depression, the anxiety, just the negativity is just weighing on people because it's really in our food. So you got to figure out how to change what you're eating because it's playing a big role.
Right. Is that a big thing at the moment over there, is it?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Right. I went to Sweden in April, and I was blown away at how free of chemicals the food was.
Oh, damn.
Taste, even the water. Like, I was like, I need some bottled water. I need bottled water. She's like, ma'am, you can drink our water out of the faucet. I'm like, no, I'm not drinking faucet water. And she gave me a cup. I'm like, this is like water. We are trying to kill us over here. Oh, my God. Yes, it's a huge problem. It's a huge problem. Yeah.
Okay. I'll make note of that.
Especially like, I was stationed overseas a few times. I'm a retired Air Force. And there were certain countries that we went to, and it's just certain things you can't buy over there that they sell here. It's just certain foods that's banned.
Oh, wow.
We just over here eating it like it's okay. Like,
wow.
Oh, we're going to die.
Jeez. Okay. Hey. Yeah,
it's pretty bad. So it's contributing to a lot of like autism, depression, anxiety. It's a lot of physiological and psychological things that this food is causing. And I hope they don't trump. Y'all send some protection because I don't want to.
I was thinking that.
I just want the people to eat fruits and vegetables, okay? And people take for granted fresh fruit and vegetables. Like, a lot of food deserts don't have these options. Like, people are literally just buying what they can because it's cheaper.
Right.
It's just sad. It's sad. They're trying to kill us. Jesus. I'm sorry, government. Please don't come get me.
Yeah.
Okay. What's one... No, I don't want to ask that question. How do you stay grounded when life still throws challenges your way?
Come back to the top three. Breath work. I don't underestimate that. You know, breath work, you got to breathe. Because what tends to happen is when circumstances are presented, again, you start to live upstairs. And if you don't get out of your head, that's where you're going to end up, you know, meeting your demise. And so... You've really got to get out of your head. And breath is a reminder. It's a reminder you're still here. You know, that which you're experiencing is not you. It's passing through. So as long as you can breathe, you've got the best tool to keep going.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because it's this one person, and I'm about to block her because I can't take it anymore. She gets on Facebook every time she posts is something negative. And I'm like, does God hate you? I'm like, what is going on? Why is every time you have something to say, it's like the sky is falling every single time? There is no way. There's no way. I'm like, how can you like live that way? There's like, you got to have some friends around you. And actually the people, some of her friends do comment and try to help her, but as soon as they provide some positive feedback or answer, she come up with another problem. I'm like, you know what? Nope, gotta go.
Right. So that's like sabotaging. So there's definitely something going on there, you know, something unresolved. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and I don't want to be mean.
Tell him, Dee Dee.
Here's the thing. Most of the time when somebody is obese, they're not happy. And there's something that's causing this obesity. And it could be something so traumatic that they have buried it and they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to express it to anybody. And most of the time, obesity is linked, and this is so morbid or just ridiculous, but it is the truth. Obesity is linked to sexual abuse. And a lot of people don't want to address it or deal with it. So they just keep packing on the weight to protect themselves to keep people out. So I think that's, I don't know if that's her story. I just know she's big. And I think that would help her if she wasn't big or if she would just move. I don't know. Maybe she not meant to not be big, but not be, but she getting on our nerves. She getting on our nerves. And we need her to, we just need something positive to happen to her, Lord, because ain't no way you don't like that girl that much. Jesus.
Oh, man. We'll pray. We'll
pray.
Gonna
pray. We're going to breathe for her. We're going to, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
Okay. All right. Next question. Fred, what time is it? Dang, I'm going too fast. Okay. These normally my last two questions because we went through these questions super fast.
My bad.
He said my bad.
Am I giving you short answers, am I?
No, I don't know why. Maybe because I skipped a couple of them because they was kind of the same question. Yeah. Okay, either way, these might you might talk about these a little bit longer anyway. So these two questions I asked all of my guests. Okay, so number one, what is the best advice you've ever received?
Best advice I've ever received? I mean, it's pretty straightforward and basic, but it made sense at the time. 2007, I was released from a professional football club, and you know I identified myself as an athlete. You know, and so when you sort of live in that world, it's just all football, all everything's football related. You know, you wake up in the morning, you train, you eat, and then you got training in the afternoons. And out of nowhere, without warning, my contract was terminated. And I didn't know where to go with life. I didn't know what to do, who to become. I nothing, no education. You know, I graduated with a lot of F's, but so one gentleman said to me, he said, "So what are you going to do now?" I said, I really don't know, because it's embarrassing to go back home and tell your moms that, you know, you've been released, or your friends, you know, your community. And he literally just said to me, "Keep going." That was it. And I thought, oh, that does make sense, you know. And so, and then, but on the back end of that, he did tell me, he said, "You look like a young man who walks with God." And I said, I'm far from it. And he said, "Well, then you need to go back and start praying again." And
that was some good advice.
No doubt. Yeah.
Okay. Actually, yeah. I got two more questions that I got another I'm about to throw in there.
Yeah.
What's the best advice you've given to somebody?
You are more than what you've become. You are more than what happens to you. You're not to be limited by your circumstances. You know?
That's deep.
Yeah.
And a lot of people need that.
Yeah.
A lot of people need that. That's good. Yeah. Dang, y'all got drama over there in Australia too.
Yeah, we got our fair share. Yeah.
Not like y'all over there with that. What y'all got going on? Out of pocket of the freaking country of the world. Y'all pray for us over there in Australia.
We got you. We'll pray. Yeah.
Y'all over here living y'all life. We over here trying to figure out what's happening. A world simulation. We don't know. Every day, something new. Oh, last question. What advice would you give 15-year-old Gideon?
You had to go there, right? You went there. 15-year-old Gideon. The first one would be find God. That, but above all else, I would say what David told me, the gentleman who gave me advice, to keep going. Because I remember specifically at 15, I was trying to get a girlfriend. I was trying to be part of the crowd. No girls wanted me. You know, it was just a weird stage, you know, and everybody's, you know, losing their virginity, exploring with everything, and I'm just there. And so I didn't feel like I was part of anything. And to be encouraged to keep going, you know, I've experienced so many blessings. You know, I've done theater, film and television, personal training. I've met some beautiful people. I've traveled. If I told the 15-year-old version of me that this is what's going to happen to you at a certain age, I wouldn't believe it because I was stuck in, I can't even get a girlfriend. So how the hell am I going to be on world stage? You know, so yeah, it'll definitely be just keep going. Yeah. You know, God's got something for you. You got to show up.
Yes. Yeah. When you were 15, did you know you were going to play football?
No, it was a hope. No, I was that would have been about our sixth year in Australia. Mm-hmm. So we were still relatively new. And so it was just because I was in newspaper articles and everybody around me was saying, oh, you're going to be something. So I believed what they said, but I never believed what I believed, you know, and bringing it back to that, what does a conversation about you to you sound like?
Wow.
You know, so I was empty in a sense, but seemingly fulfilled because of what was happening around me.
Yeah. Outside validation.
Hello.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. Gideon, you are a gem. You are a wealth of knowledge.
I appreciate you.
You're pretty awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Can you clone yourself? We need some help over here.
Let's get your book. Is that your book right there?
This is my book. Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, Breaking the Cycle.
Called Breaking the Cycle of Childhood Trauma.
Come on.
I wrote this book and it was probably the hardest thing I've ever done. It tells about a lot of my trauma, most of the trauma that I've never talked about ever in life. Right. So people get a real inside look, but it's also a guide to raising emotionally healthy and independent daughters. Because I think the mother-daughter relationship is so broken and it's so many stories that haven't been told, so many secrets that's been kept. And it's a lot of things that moms keep from their daughters that they probably should share with them that can help them. So last week I interviewed my daughter on the show. It was the toughest interview I've ever done. And it was a great interview, but it was really tough. I learned some things live that I didn't know, but it was healing for her. And I'm so happy that she got the stuff off of her chest that she needed to, that she was scared to tell me. Wow. So I'm really proud of this book. It's helping people. It's starting the conversations that we've been scared to have for generations. Is getting me on platforms to talk on a more national level so that people can start to open up and have these conversations. So, yeah, make sure y'all go get my book, Breaking the Cycle of Childhood Trauma. It's on Amazon, but I would love for you to get it from my website. I can sign it for you. I have lots of little cute trinkets I put in the box for you. If you get it from my website, thecoraqueen.com/book, I'll hook you up with it. So,
yeah.
And this book also, when I talk about the mother-daughter relationship, it caused a very, well, I ain't gonna say it's big because I don't know. What I heard was that my mother's not talking to me anymore because she's not talking to me. So I don't know. But yeah, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. That's big. That's wow.
Yeah. So Do I regret writing a book? No, not at all. Hopefully she'll get over it. Yeah. But what I wrote about was my experience as a child, and I'm not sure how that's wrong. So my daughter really comforted me in that moment where my mom decided not to talk to me anymore. And she pretty much, because she's a mom now, my daughter is, and she's just like, don't even worry about it. Don't even worry about it. She said, this is for a reason. And keep going. Keep going.
Keep. Amen. Yeah. Amen, Dee Dee. Well done.
Thank you. Well, Gideon, I appreciate you for coming on my show.
I appreciate you. Yeah.
People need to know about you, how they can follow you. If you have anything coming up, let them know so they can follow you and keep up to date on what you got going on.
I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, you're a legend.
Yeah. Sean, tell them, are you on Instagram or?
Yeah. I'm on Instagram. The name Gideon Mazembe. That's Instagram, TikTok, all social media platforms. What have we got coming up? In the month of October, October 10th, if you've got Amazon Prime, I star alongside Priyanka Chopra. I don't know if you guys...
Yes!
Yeah, so I play a bad guy in a movie called The Bluff alongside my brother. So that comes out October 10th, yeah.
I will definitely be watching. That's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, I told y'all he was that dude. Y'all thought I was. Well, thank you. Y'all make sure y'all follow Gideon. Y'all, he's amazing. And of course, he got so much going on. And maybe he'll invite y'all to Australia, but don't fly him out. We don't need no sex trafficking.
Make him take their own. What about you, Dee Dee? You going to come to Australia?
I need to.
You do.
Do you live in the same, I guess, city as Bianca?
Yeah, that's my sis. Yeah, she's up the road.
See, yeah, I gotta come over there. I'm coming. Come. I am coming.
Yeah. We got you.
Let me check my calendar, see when I'm
really good. We got you. We'll show you Australia. Yeah.
Okay. Listen. Yeah. Gideon, don't threaten me with a good time in that accent. I appreciate it. Y'all know who I am. I'm the core queen. Make sure y'all check out my YouTube channel, subscribe, turn on the notification bells. Make sure you like this video, comment on this video, share the podcast with everybody you know. We need y'all every week, same time, same place. Every Wednesday, we are live, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time on YouTube. Y'all can follow me on all social media platforms, Dee Dee Leggett or the core queen. Type it in, Google me, you'll find me. I'm everywhere. The one thing that I want to promote today, this is the most important thing for me this month, is my annual Back to School Bash. We will be in my hometown, Bristol, Pennsylvania, August 23rd from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Marie Lowe Park, where I'm from, Bristol, Pennsylvania, the Terrace Courts. Y'all, please bring the kids out. We got horses out there for them to ride. We have a bouncy house. We got water ice. We got food. We got games. We have the Dancing Dolls of Bristol coming out to nuck and buck for us, to show us their little dance moves. Please come out there, y'all. We're going to have a great time like we do every year. And I appreciate all the people who have donated, all my sponsors, all my volunteers. Y'all, the only reason I can make this happen is the third annual Back to School Bash in honor of my grandmother, Evelyn Joyce Leggett. Y'all, please come out and check it out. We're going to have a good time again. And I will see y'all next week. I'm out, y'all. Peace.